Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell, author of The Laws of Material Wealth. Of course, if you've been listening, you know we had 54 shows, 54 pieces of training went out to you, and then it was covered on the show, along with the workbook, 4 DVDs, and the book itself. This is a very comprehensive personal development program, but now we are talking to guests from all walks of life, and people who have accomplished things and have done things that I think it's worthwhile for you to know about. And my guest this evening is a librarian. She's an author, a writer of children's books, and a speaker, and we'll be talking to her in a few moments after the Renford Revelations tonight. Keep in mind, if you have someone who would like to listen to the show and possibly are not online or don't can't get to a computer, they can call in on 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. If you are watching or listening on the computer or you're listening through the internet or listening on the phone, if you would like to ask a question of my guest, then you may do so at by simply pressing the 1 button on your touch tone dial, and that will flag me to bring you in for your question or comment. Alice Faye Duncan is my guest tonight, and we'll be with her shortly. Tonight's blog is the Renford Revelation. You will be able to get them, like always, by going to iam-cor.org. That's iam-cor.org/blog. Now, iam-cor.org is the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. You're welcome to go there and visit the bookstore, visit the 3 degree levels of study, see the courses, see the history of the Institute. We'd love to have you there. There are also 3 free e-books that you can download, The Searcher's Roadmap, The Unity Principles, and The Core Document. There's also the Lightways electronic magazine, e-zine, that you can download there free. All of that's free for those who would like to know a little bit more about us. Tonight's Renford Revelation is entitled Work on Self. What is the beginning and end of our work on self? Can the individual do to begin the work on self and take advantage of the roadmap left by the great masters? How do we access this higher thought, which has such transforming power? How do we begin the process of transcendence and benefit by the pure potentiality that comes from harmony and balance? These are all important questions for the individual who now understands the import of revelation. While we live in a world of opposites we call good and evil, we are constantly creating duality. If we focus on a perceived problem, we make it bigger. We are involved in a struggle and waste energy. We are dealing with what is versus what we think should be. As long as there is a difference between what is and what we think should be, we are creating duality, not becoming one with what is. In this process, we have conflict, and this is a waste of energy. Place the focus in the observation, what is, until there is clarity. And in this state of clarity as to what is, focus on the higher thought of your creation of what is to be. Relative thought is based in experience and memory. This kind of thought is always based in the past. It cannot see what is new because it has no point of reference but the past. Our only reference is in past pleasure or past fear. pleasure is momentary, but fear lingers, so that we are constantly afraid of life. What are we in relative thought but a collection of memories? We identify with what we have collected materially and our memories. Add to this our desire for more of the same, and we have our psychological makeup. To get past this state, there must be a death to the old and an opening of ourselves to higher thought. When we observe this state without attachment, suppression, or judgment, we die to conflict. We drop these possessions, and there is no limit to what we can do. We can accomplish this only through intense observation without judgment. William Law noted, "Once a man understands that he is down here in time and space in order to awaken to another state of himself, everything that happens to him, whether good or bad, comes to have a new meaning. He speaks to the first important awareness, that is, we have a purpose for being here. If we can but come to this single conclusion, we are on the path. The law of attraction will begin to pull to us what we need to proceed on this path. We will meet people, come across books, and in all manner of ways be led on the path to knowledge and understanding." Maurice Nicole addresses this quote from Law as follows: "In the light of such a standpoint, the ambiguousness of life vanishes. A continual state of doubting and vacillation is replaced by the beginning of a new kind of knowledge. One no longer stares at life trying to decide whether it means something or means nothing. One perceives that with this ordinary knowledge that one gains from life, one can never solve any of those conundrums which occupy us secretly and which we never know how to think about distinctly. Incapable of reaching ourselves, we remain wandering about in a growing indistinctiveness, and drowned in the illusion of tomorrow, we see no reason why we should make any efforts to struggle with ourselves now. We cling to all the negations that belong to the illusion of passing time, and perhaps as life seems to pass swiftly and forever away, comfort ourselves with the deadly dream that we have tried to do our best. We start by recognizing that there is more to being than this physical body. We recognize by virtue of this fact that there must be a reason, a purpose for our lives. We earnestly desire to have understanding, and we usually begin with prayer and meditation. We become seekers because Jesus told us that all will be made known. Prayer and meditation are never harmful, but I suggest that there are steps to be taken before prayer and meditation so that our prayer and meditation can be effective. Everything I write in my articles, including this one, is verifiable by the most important individual in your process, you. It is your life experiences you will be examining, and it is your experiences that can be associated with each of the universal laws. Even a single facet of each universal law will provide the platform for the inner mind, the intuitive mind, to expand. Contemplative meditation, in which you examine your life experiences as they relate to the laws and the process of self-observation, provide a course of action that is really not action but observation of what is. Identify and verify each universal law by your life experiences. Do not approach the process by trying to think of something that has happened to you that might be the law of being or any of the laws as I outlined them. Take the opposite approach and isolate major events in your life and then work to determine which law or combination of laws was in effect. The benefit of this work on self are infinite, but there are two noticeable benefits you will notice as these. They are enough to change your life. You will become fully aware of the rules of the game of life. In other words, you will never be wondering why something is happening to you. You will know. The second benefit it comes from the fact that no matter who you are listening to on television, in church, or workshops, or seminars, you'll know whether they know or not. You will know whether they are repeating traditional beliefs or have lived what they are talking about. And that is my revelation for tonight. I'd like to get to my guest, Alice Faye Duncan. Alice is a librarian, Shelby County Schools, and a test coordinator. She's the author of several books. Hello Sunshine is the one that we'll be talking about tonight, but she's also published with Simon & Schuster. Alice, welcome to the show.
Yes.
Tell us about
this. Thank you so much.
You've got one that's called Honey Baby Sugar Child. with Simon
yes.
and Schuster.
Yes.
And that's a
that's
a pictorial, isn't it?
Right. It's a children's book. It was published in 2005. It's a mother's love song to her baby. It was, and as I said, it was published in 2005, and it's gone now into its seventh printing. It's been around now for 10 years. The book is done in what would be considered black vernacular. I wrote it somewhat like a Paul Laurence Dunbar poem, a Langston Hughes poem, a Maya Angelou poem, and it's a mother's lullaby to her young child.
And then you've got also a Christmas Soup.
Yes, Christmas Soup is a story about it's a children's book as well. And it was published in 2005 also, the same year that Honey Baby Sugar Child was published. It is with Zondervan, which is a Christian publisher. And it is about a poor family at Christmas. All they have is soup. And the little boy in the family, he's complaining because, you know, it's like every Christmas we have nothing but this measly soup. That's all we have, this Christmas soup, which is like analogous to tomato soup and no meat, no protein. And he complains and complains. And so the family has a knock at the door and he thinks, oh, are we having pizza? Is it pizza delivery? You know, is this the Christmas miracle? And, of course, it's not. It's a homeless family. They come knocking. And they smell the aroma of the Christmas soup. And they ask if they can come in because they're on their way to a shelter, but it's cold, it's snowy, and they just needed to take a break from their walk. And so the mother welcomes them in, and she offers them some of their meager Christmas soup. And they are so refreshed and revitalized by it that it takes away their sunken and you know, sunken look. It takes away their chill, and they are now ready to continue their journey on to the shelter where they're going. And the little boy learns from that you know what, even at your lowest point, your little bit, your very little bit, your meager little bit becomes a lot when you share it. Or your little bit becomes a lot when you give it away. And so that's what that book is about. And again, it's a children's book. The only book right now that I actively have in print for children is The Honey Baby Sugar Child, which is the mother's lullaby for children. And that's my Simon & Schuster book from 2005. But what I've been doing now is I'm still actively publishing children's books with, you know, New York trade publishers, but I'm also writing adult books, and they're just little motivational 34-page books that encourage adults to live their best lives. And the latest book for adults that I have is called Hello Sunshine, 5 Habits to Uncloud Your Day. And I thank you for inviting me to come on your show to talk about my very first adult book.
I think it's like that bowl of soup. It can revitalize. It doesn't have to be big, 34 pages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody doesn't have to write 500-page books. In fact, I think those big ones intimidate a lot of folks. But a little book like this, they might take the time to read these main 5 points. And and we are going to cover these 5 habits to uncloud your day, okay? Can we go ahead and talk a little bit about those 5?
Habits? Yeah, surely.
Habits,
I would love to. I would love to. All right, and so I've titled the book Hello Sunshine, 5 Habits to Uncloud Your Day. And I have 5 habits that I have discovered over the course of 20 years or so that work effectively for me. The first habit is gratitude. The second habit is silence. Third habit is benevolence. Fourth habit is forgiveness. And the fifth habit is tenacity. And what happened is, over the course of working 20 years as a librarian, who also wants very much, or who also loves very much to write, over the course of those 20 years, you know, there comes, as a writer, there comes a lot of rejection. There comes a lot of disappointment. And you're writing and you're putting your best foot forward and you're putting your heart into all your words and you're trying to come up with plots and arcs and all of those things that are a part of fiction writing. And you're turning your manuscripts in to your editor and you're turning them in to your agent. And oftentimes they are not coming back with a favorable word. They are often coming back with a, hey, almost there, but not there yet. They're coming back, well, this is good, but it's not right for my list. As a writer, you know how it is. It's just the writer's life, the artist's life, whether you're writing, dancing, creating music, painting, sculpting, the artist's life is filled with moments of rejection. And so as a librarian who was also writing and trying very much to land, you know, other deals with New York publishers, I just found that oftentimes my disappointment would spin me into a blue funk of sorts. And I was like, I can't live my life like this, when I know that I want writing to be always a part of my life, because I do, I enjoy the process. It's a hard task, but I do enjoy the process. But the sadness and the despondency that would often come from the rejection was just overwhelming. And I was like, I can't continue to do this. And so there are five things over the course of 20 years that I have discovered that really helped me deal with the rejection of writing and help me deal with the drudgery of just, you know, continuing to go on and do the responsibilities of every regular, everyday life. I mean, you know, they're just responsibilities that we have that are continuous and that we have to do. And sometimes it's like, oh, Lord, you know, do I have to wash clothes just one more day? I mean, can a week pass where I just don't have to wash clothes? It's like, no, you have to continue with these, you know, the responsibilities of life, and none of it ever stops. None of you cannot get off the merry-go-round. But there is a way to make life pleasant in spite of the everyday responsibilities. There's a way to make life pleasant.
I want to come back during the show and talk about this, because having been in the publishing business for 15 years, I've watched the business completely metamorphosis and has changed so much that it bears very little resemblance to what I saw in publishing 15 and 20 years ago. And I do want to come back to that and talk about some of your experiences there, because I think that I can bring some interesting points on that. It is true, you are exposing as a writer yourself. You're laying it all out there. And it's hard to accept rejection. I, in my case, I got very combative about it. I remember calling one particular organization, and they said, are you a writer or a publisher? And I said, I'm a writer. And they said, well, we only deal with publishers. So I waited about 2 weeks and called them back, and I said, this is Jim Powell with IM Press, and they told me everything I wanted to know. I learned very early in this publishing business that there is no such thing as no. What you want to do, you go about doing it, and you'll get it done, and that's that. Just don't take... There's too many people out there with the power to say no and too few that can say yes. And you've got to get past the ones that can say no.
I've learned that sometimes, I mean, no is a part of life. I mean, I was a child, and everything as a child that I wanted, my mother did not grant me. Sometimes she did not grant it because it was not good for me. sometimes she did not grant it because I was not able to handle the request that I was making. You know, so there, no's have always been a part of my life for a variety of reasons that were necessary. And in the process of that, though, while you as a writer, as someone who, not just writer, but as someone who has hopes and dreams and goals and ambitions and wants to attain a variety of things, you know, things that, you know, span the spectrum from house to shoes to, you know, to new carpet. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that we're wishing for, hoping for, whatever. But and sometimes we have to wait on those things. So there are five things that I came up with over the span of 20 years that have allowed me to live my days with joy, regardless of the answers that I am getting. Regardless if things are not as perfect or as I aspire them to be, there are ways to live with joy, have joy, and to be a giver of joy. And those habits, as I said before, are gratitude, silence, benevolence, forgiveness, and tenacity. Let's talk about gratitude first, which is the first habit that can uncloud your day. I get up in the morning with gratitude on my lips. I get up in the morning telling the Creator, thank you for this opportunity to try one more day to receive goodness and to be a giver of goodness. Oftentimes, when I was much younger, I was a big complainer, a big complainer. It's like, okay, you know, oh, my God. I mean, I was just a big complainer. For example, like when I was a child, you know, my parents could never get things right. My mother could never get things right. It's, you know, it's like, you're not buying me the right clothes. You're not, you know, you're not taking me to the, you know, to the right mall or you know, complainers. Just, you know, this is not what I wanted to have for dinner. You know, why can't we have something else? It's just a big complainer. And what I found as I grew older is that the more I became grateful for what I did possess, then the more joy I had within, and the more I acquiesced to the Creator's will for what He wanted me to have, then God's vision and His desire for me was always bigger and grander and better than the little marginal dream that I had for myself. Just by being grateful,
Your mother told.
And so
I'm sorry. Your mother said,
go ahead.
Your mother had a one there where you were complaining about your father not coming to the book signing, and she told you to be thankful for who did come.
Right. My mother would tell me, like, you're complaining about, you know, about who didn't come, because I had a book signing and my dad didn't show up, and I was like, you know, he said he was coming, blah blah, and I was complaining to my mom, you know, hey, he didn't show up, you know, one more time, he's not keeping his word. And my mother said, Alice, and it's a lesson I take with me today. She's like, look, you need to be grateful for those who come. I mean, you know, don't worry about what you didn't receive. Be grateful for what you have. And just changing that perspective and changing my attitude, it then brought joy to
Alice,
me.
Alice, if I can interrupt you here, those of you who've been in this program, personal development program, will recognize these five principles that Alice, in the fact, she hit it right on the head right there. The power of gratitude is the universal law of proper perspective. That was the first one, and you'll recognize the others. And when we get to the others, we'll just mention it in relation to what you've been studying. So you definitely will recognize it, because she's very clear on these five points. Go ahead, Alice.
And so gratitude was the first habit that I began to realize, you know what, I can clear my own sky and bring about my own sunshine just by changing my perspective and being grateful for what I do have. You know, why complain because I don't have new shoes when the shoes I have are sturdy well and carrying me about, you know?
That's right.
And the second habit that I realized I could use to brighten my own day and to manufacture my own sunshine, which is because ultimately nobody can manufacture your sunshine except you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, you are the beginning and end to your own joy. If you don't have the key to your own joy, you cannot expect someone else to have it. Therefore, you start with the I am, you know, as your press is called. You start with the I am within. And so the second habit is silence. The only way that you can hear, I happen to believe, you know, what the Bible says, Christ in you is the hope of glory. I believe that the Christ dwells in each of us, that Christ's mind dwells in each of us, and that the only way we can tap into that divine mind is by being quiet and teaching ourselves how to listen to that still small voice. And oftentimes we live in a world of high stimulation. Every day is filled with emails, and people are texting 24 hours a day, and people are looking at television, and people are DVRing their favorite program. So as soon as they get out of the car, run into the house, fix the dinner, you know, it's everybody is turned on. When the only way to really tap into divine mind is to turn off, is to turn up, not the noise, but to turn up the silence and to go within to find what is the divine mind of God, the creator, the mother, father, God, what is divine mind trying to get to you, trying to tell you, how is the divine trying to guide you and lead you to those open doors so that you can live your dreams, so that you can receive the peace, the joy, the love that you aspire to have. And so what I do is I work like everybody else, but in the morning before going to work, I reserve at least 5 to 10 minutes before I walk out the door to just sitting in silence, to prayer, to reading some scripture, to reading some type of book for meditation. I practice proper breathing, making sure that I get the oxygen to my brain so that I become very lucid. And what happens in that silence during the course of a morning for just 5 or 10 minutes, what ends up happening is that the mind, the divine mind, the Spirit of God insinuates wisdom into my thinking. And my whole day can sometimes unfold right before me in that 5 minutes, and I know exactly and precisely how to move from the house to the job to whatever responsibilities I have. I know exactly what I should do. There can be some befuddlement before I even go into my meditation, and there might be some task at work that has me befuddled or some conundrum at work that has me just, you know, grappling with, oh, what should I do? And then in that meditation time, I mean, the answers will just like come very quietly, but with precision. And I can get up, move from the house, go to the work, encounter my coworkers, know exactly what to say, exactly what to do, exactly what not to do, exactly what not to say. And things, you know, by the end of the day, things have worked out with such precision, with such peaceful ease, and I just stand amazed. But each time I stand amazed, some day by day I stand amazed. But I really shouldn't. People say, "Well, you shouldn't be amazed, and you this is what you've been practicing." But just, you know, the incredible infinite mind of God and how He speaks to us in that silent time, it keeps me baffled day by day. I'm baffled. I will tell you this, and this has this really is, it's not in my book, but it was something that happened to me this week. I was in a state of meditation, just a quietness, sitting alone in a chair by myself, but I was grappling with a writing idea. And I was like, Lord, what should I do? You know, just quiet, not talking, but just, going in my mind over, like, what should I do? What should I do? And the Spirit of God said, the story you are seeking, because it was a writing thing I was trying to do, but the Spirit of God said, the story you are seeking is also seeking you. And I said, it just caught me off guard. I'm like, that sounds good. The story that I am seeking is also seeking me. So I was in the middle of, like, trying to do some research and not knowing where to start, and I was researching the life of an African-American woman in the Mississippi Delta. So I said, well, you know what, I'll call a library in Greenwood, see if they can help me. I called the library. I said, hey, I'm looking for, this historic woman who, I think, according to my research, lives in Greenwood, and, she accomplished this, this, and this. And so the woman at the library, the librarian says, I don't know her, but I'll get somebody, I'll see if I can ask around the community. I said, okay. So then I went and did some more research. I said, well, I'll call this person. So I called somebody else, and the man, it was an African-American man, he said, I know of her, but I don't have a number, because I really wanted, as a primary source, I wanted to speak to this historical figure myself, to ask her about her history and to tell her that I wanted to do a book about her life for children. And he said he couldn't help me. But in talking to the man, he did give me, like, some areas or some places that I could check, because this African-American woman was an educator. So I called the old school where this teacher had taught. And in calling the school, I asked the school secretary, did she know? I was like, I'm looking for this particular teacher, historical figure, taught at your school, did great things for children in the Mississippi Delta. I said, and I'm trying to, find someone who knows her. Do you know what the school secretary said? She says, that is my cousin, and I just got through speaking with her on the phone. I'm like, are you serious? But now, mind you, an hour before I went through all of these shenanigans, the Spirit of God said, the story you are seeking is also seeking you. I went from that moment, the woman gave me the teacher's telephone number. I called the teacher. I said, hey, I'm trying to write a story about your life for children. And she seemed very pleased. She said that she needed to think about it. Then she called me back like a couple of days and said she thought about it. And she said, yes, let's proceed and let's try to do a story. And I was like, oh God. I mean, but how did I come to that? It was in my quiet meditation time where the Spirit of God said, hey, the story that you are seeking is also seeking you. So it was like, I was befuddled. I had a conundrum. I was like, well, maybe I should stop. Maybe this is not a writing idea I should pursue. But then the Spirit said, no, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. And then, bam, I came to the telephone number, the primary source, and there it was. So that is the benefits of those are the benefits, I think, of silence. God speaks in silence. He speaks precisely. The third habit is benevolence. You talk about prosperity, and you're trying to get people to get to their life where nothing is lacking and nothing is missing. But what happens, I believe, the reason why people often remain in that posture is because they don't realize they are not in lack. Even so, it goes back to my Christmas soup story. Even when you feel you have nothing, you always have something to offer the universe. When you feel like you are at your lowest, that you're at the bottom, and that you have exhausted all of your resources, God still leaves you with something to offer. You say, I don't have money. Well, then you have time. You say, I don't have time. Then you have money. You say, well, I can't volunteer by going. Well, you can stay at home and volunteer by calling. There's always something that you have to offer. And as you let go, you live with an open hand, then something comes to fill your hand up. As you let go, then things flow back, back into your coffers and back to, to fill you up with what you need, to fill up your void. As you let go of yourself, as you share yourself in time, share yourself in talent, share yourself in resources, but just share whatever you have, share whatever you have. And if you let go, something will come back to you. I learned that from my mother. My mother is now 78 years old, and oftentimes I can go to her house. My mother's 78 years old. She's retired. She's on a limited income. But I can go to her house right now, and there will be on her kitchen table a stack of letters. I used to, when I was younger, and, maybe 10 years ago, I would go in my mom's house and I would see these stack of letters. I would think, oh, these are her bills. But then one day I got nosy. I said, let me see. Every time I go to my mom's house, she's got all these stack of bills. I'm like, she's retired. How can a retired woman have these many bills? And what I found is that on my mom's table, those letters that she has, they're not bills at all. They are letters to St. Jude. They are letters to the Heart Association. They are letters to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. I mean, my mother, she exhausts her resources to share. And as a result, she never asked me for anything. And she's on a limited income. She always has what she needs and above and beyond. She has enough to live. She has enough to give. And, I mean, she's never at a dearth. And so I learned from watching her that, you know what? You can give yourself out of a hole. You can give yourself out of a deficit simply by feeding the needs of others. And so, and another thing I know in terms of unclouding your day, whenever you're in a blue funk, the way you can unfunk yourself immediately is by getting up from your stupor and doing something for someone else. I mean, with the quickness, joy comes. The minute you make someone else happy, you yourself are made happy. And so that is my third habit. And the fourth habit of unclouding your day, and it's probably the hardest habit because many of us are justified in our grudges, but the fourth habit to unclouding your day is forgiveness. We've got to forgive those who have trespassed against us in the most egregious of ways, and we have to forgive those who have trespassed against us in the slightest of ways, in the simplest of ways. We've got to forgive our neighbor who continues to, to leave his garbage on the curb, and we've also have to forgive our neighbor who stole our bicycle, and forgive our neighbor who stole our money, and forgive our neighbor who stole our car, and forgive our neighbor who hurt our feelings, and forgive our coworker who hurt our feelings, forgive our coworker who lied on us. We have to forgive our mother who abandoned us. We have to forgive our father who abandoned us. And the reason we have to forgive is because if we don't, it's the bitterness that eats away at our hearts. It's the bitterness that eats away at our joy. as long as I'm holding a grudge against you and have venom against you, then I can't be happy myself, because I'm holding you. You know, I got to hold you like a prison guard. I got to hold you hostage, and a prison guard himself. Prison guard is also in where? In jail, just like the prisoner. So as a prison guard, I got to hold you hostage with my grudge, with my venom, with my bitterness. And it ends up, you know, keeping me from having my joy. It also, when I'm angry or bitter against you, I'm not inflicting any pain on you. I'm inflicting pain on myself. It's like I've put the noose around my own neck, and I've squeezed it. You know, when if I let you go, then I let myself go, and I'm free. But that's very hard, because oftentimes we are justified, and oftentimes we do have reasons to be angry. I mean, oftentimes, yes, we have been mistreated. Yes, we have been victimized. Yes, we have a reason to be mad. But at the same time, as we let that anger fester, we are the only ones who are imprisoned. And so we have to let it go. And in forgiveness, the greatest thing, the greatest person we have to forgive ourselves, because sometimes we have misbehaved, and sometimes we have made silly choices and done things that have just sabotaged our own joy that we've done ourselves. And then so we have to look at ourselves and forgive ourselves, to let ourselves go, to free ourselves from our own you know, misdoings, I guess, or our own misjudgments, wrong thinking, wrong deeds. We have to forgive ourselves, which oftentimes is the hardest thing to do, because it was no one else who did it. We did it ourselves, out of ignorance, out of lust, out of greed, out of anger, out of being reactionary. We did it ourselves. But we have to forgive ourselves for that, so that we can move on, move forward. And then the last habit that will uncloud our day and bring us joy is the habit of tenacity. I talked about writing. I talked about seasons of rejection in writing. The gifts that we have and the desires that we have not been placed in our hearts by us. I did not put it in myself to be a writer. I did not put it in myself to be a librarian. I did not choose either of those vocations. It is the Creator who planted those vocations and those desires within me to pursue. And because they have been planted in me by divine mind, then I have to believe. Faith without seeing, I have to believe that this drive, this calling, this goal to write, to be a librarian, to share the gift of books, to share the gift of literacy, I have to believe that it is a design, it has been divinely purposed. And even when I am not experiencing financial success, secular success, worldly success, even when nobody knows or cares about my book, Hello Sunshine, 5 Habits to Uncloud Your Day, I have to believe that I must continue with tenacity and perseverance to share my message, because it is not of me. It is something that God has ordained, and I can only have joy when I am doing God's will. So, as long as the unction, the inkling is there to write, I must write. As long as the unction or inkling is there for people aspire to have businesses, people aspire to be musicians, people aspire to act, people aspire to be parents, people aspire to get married, and sometimes those relationships don't manifest as quickly or beautifully as they would like them to. Sometimes people aspire to be parents, and sometimes it takes a while for an actual pregnancy to take. But the thing, you don't stop trying. just because it didn't happen in a year, just because it didn't happen after 2 years of marriage or 3 years of marriage, that doesn't mean you stop trying to get pregnant. No, you continue to try because God put that unction and that inkling in. You continue to try. And if you keep on pressing toward the goal, at some point, the vision will appear. I'm reminded, and then because I know probably our time is coming to a close, but in terms of the habit of tenacity, I'm reminded of the story in the Bible where you had Elizabeth and Zechariah, her husband. They were old in age. The Bible says, they were barren. But the Lord, they felt in their hearts that God said that they would have a child. And before they saw death, in their old age, in their barren state, Elizabeth was found with child. Elizabeth was pregnant. And did they not have a son? And he was the divine dream, John the Divine. So, I am not on the New York Times bestseller list, but in my heart, I believe that I shall be there one day. And so what do I continue to do? I continue to write. I continue to persevere. I continue to practice tenacity. And I continue to share these five habits that see me through. I continue to share these five habits with other people. And those five habits that will uncloud your day, I have found them to be first. The first habit is that of gratitude. And the second habit is that of silence. The third habit is that of benevolence. The fourth habit is that of forgiveness. And the fifth habit is that perseverance and tenacity. And I thank you. I thank you so much, Mr. Jim. I thank you for having me this evening.
Well, it's been a pleasure. We're not quite finished yet, but what we want to do is get a little bit of information out there how our listeners can get a hold to a copy of Hello Sunshine, Five Habits to Uncloud Your Day by Alice Faye Duncan. How do they go about buying the book?
All they have to do is go to www.uncloudyday.com. That's www.uncloudy.com. www.uncloudyday.com. I think I said that right, Jim. Hold on.
No, you left the day out last time, but we got it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, all right. So it's
www.uncloudyday.com.
Uncloudyday. Yep, that's it.
Now, can they email you? Can they talk to you by
Hello,
Alice Faye?
Mm-hmm. What will happen is if you go to www.uncloudyday.com, that will take you right to my Amazon page. Amazon page has my email address. Amazon page has my website address. All of that, everything that you need. And always you can get on Google and just look up Alice Faye Duncan, and the first link, bam, is going to be me and my email address.
Now you have been available for speaking engagements. I believe there's writing circles, teacher associations, library groups, and possibly others that where you speak.
Yes. I'm available for speaking. If you want me to come to like writing conferences, talk about self-publishing, I can do that. If you want me to come to writing conferences and talk about how to write children's books and land with a major trade New York publisher, I can do that. With small groups, I speak with librarian groups, educator groups. I'm also a national board educator, so I speak to a lot of teacher groups about literacy. With my librarian hat on, and if you email me and you want to write, ask me questions about publishing or how to the self-publishing process, or if you want to ask me about how to get a publisher if you're interested in writing children's books, then by all means feel free to email me. I feel like information is power, And the more we share with others, you know, the higher we all excel and succeed. So I am not trying to withhold information from anyone. If I know the answer, or if I know where to find the answer, I will certainly share it with you.
Well, we work at I Am Press. We work specifically, we don't have a particular genre. We work with first-time authors primarily. And and basically the objective there is to put them in the position to make an informed decision. So there's a lot of counseling up front because we like working with authors who want to retain ownership of their intellectual property. We don't have much confidence in the old traditional ways that these have been done. And there will be and are some, I spoke this weekend with about six people who are wanting to publish their book. Sometimes we talk about writing, you know, advice as far as the process of writing and the process of publishing as well. But when you go to these groups, are these, do you go to any of them where you do a form of motivational speaking, inspirational type of thing?
Yes, this weekend they had a I am in Memphis. So this weekend there was like a book club gathering at Panera Bread. It was just a book club. They wanted to do their meeting there, and it was about like 14, 15 people. I talked, you know, I shared with them my book, Hello Sunshine. I mean, which in itself is somewhat of a motivational self-help
tool. Inspirational anyway.
Yes, yes. And so I share with them, you know, just some of the anecdotes from my own life and some of the anecdotes from the book about, you know, my journey as a writer, my journey as my mother's daughter, my journey as a public school educator. And it was very inspiring. You know, after I left, I got a lot of emails from the people in the group, and they were saying how, you know, it was really, particularly they were saying that the chapter on forgiveness really inspired them and helped them. And it was just amazing because I'm just so very interested in sharing and giving to others. But when I left that day from the gathering, you know, many of the readers that participated, they wanted to leave me with blessings and they wanted to leave me with prayers. And people said, you know, I'm going to be praying for you and your books. I'm going to be praying for you, you know, in your profession. And it was just really, really wonderful, the exchange of, you know, me offering them what I had to share, but them wanting very much to also deposit something with me. And I was just like, wow, you know, it was just incredible. But it goes back to the section about benevolence. You know, whenever you live with an open hand, you will never be at a deficit. And the thing is, sometimes people think, well, I don't have enough to give. I don't have enough to share. You know, I'm already, you know, it's such a, I don't want to say a poverty way of thinking, but it is. It's just such a destitute and desperate way of thinking. But when you realize that you are a child of God, and what did Paul say? He said, all things are mine. Which is ultimately because I am connected to the Mother, Father, God, then all reason, you know, I'm not a millionaire, but I have for this day, I have my daily bread, I have my daily portion, I have my daily provision, and, you know, sometimes my daily provision is greater than others, but I always have a daily portion. I am never at a deficit. Where I don't have food, I don't have clothing, I don't have shelter. And therefore, if I share it with others, I'm truly walking in abundance when I share it, because then I open up the floodgates for more to come. What does it say? Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. And what I have sent out into the world comes back to me in compound measure. And so to experience that after I spoke this weekend and where I had made a deposit, you know, with my words and my book, and then the people just wanted to make a deposit back with me, it was just so refreshing. So, yes, I'm very interested in, you know, whenever I can, and if I have the time, oftentimes my weekends are filled with me trying to write because I work, you know, I'm working during the week. So oftentimes I really don't have a lot of time to speak because I'm always just trying to catch up on time with writing and researching. But, yes, I'm available.
How is the project with the teacher from the Delta proceeding?
I just initiated it this week when God said the story you are seeking is also seeking you. I just initiated it this week. And so what I'm doing now is before I even meet to have an interview and ask questions, I'm just gathering up my research and reading what I can, even though not a lot is written about how this teacher has helped children in the Delta, but I'm just researching it right now to try to find what I can so that my questions, like you, so that my questions, when I do have that first real interview, that my questions are intelligent and that I can glean something that I can turn into a story that will help children. Ultimately, I want children to know that, hey, just because I'm from the Delta, and just because the place I'm from is deemed like Jesus, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Just because the place I'm from is deemed as a place where, you know, no greatness comes, you know, or no greatness evolves, well, that's a lie from the pit of hell, or that's a lie from, that's just a, it's a lie, good things do come out of the Delta, and good people come out of the Delta. And, in fact, not only good people and good things, but greatness has and will continue to come from the Mississippi Delta. And I just, you know, because it's an area of despair oftentimes, especially now with mechanization coming and, you know, there, you know, the agriculture, it's all like computer operated and stuff, and so not really a lot of workers needed now to even work the land in the Delta. I just want the children there to know that, hey, that you are, God is great and God resides in you, and therefore you are great. And
I have to agree with you that great things come out of the Delta. I was born in Cleveland, Mississippi. And my my grandmother and everybody in the family were around between Holcomb and Greenwood and Carroll County there. So lots of good folks down there. Hope some of you are listening tonight. Call in and tell us you agree with my guest,
Amen.
Alex Faye Duncan, about good
Thank
things
you.
Coming out of the Delta.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And be in prayer for me about, you know, be in prayer for me about it. I'm working on another story about a artist. His name is Carol Clore, who comes from the Arkansas Delta. For some reason, the Delta has really captured my heart. I guess because I live in Memphis, which is the front door of the Delta. So, so anyways, just, you know,
for being with me tonight. We're just about out of time, but and maybe we can have you come back and talk with us again about some of your projects. I want to thank all of
I'd
you for being with us, and I want to invite you to go to im-core.org, check out the virtual campus of the Institute, get your free download of those e-books. Go to youtube.com, type in Renford Broadcast Network, and view some of the shows, the Bookman shows, the Core Concepts lectures, the Laws of Material Wealth DVDs, the audio books, and the Renford Theater. You're all welcome. And catch us again next week on the RBR Network with another edition of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.